Well, this hour, we'll take your phone calls with Bill Friedman as we talk about Las Vegas, how it started, and what's going on with it right now. I've got a few more questions for him, but then we'll come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Bill Friedman. So, Bill, did the mob dump people in the desert or not?
No, because of the group of people who came here, to give a clear perspective of the way the world I lived in, Vegas had a high rate of street crime, something totally different. When it came to the casinos and organized crime, the people that were here were very anti-violent.
Right.
They only killed if threatened, and I cannot state strongly enough, these were tough guys, big hearts, but if you threatened them...
Or got in their way...
That they didn't do.
Really?
Yeah, they never...
But the movies tell us that, Bill. The movies have that happen.
I'm talking about this group. They never... made a victim out of anybody. They didn't do anything the casinos aren't doing today. They did booze, gambling, cigarettes. And that was the extent of anything they did. So, and they didn't believe in violence. I lived in a completely non-violent, non-threatening world. Gambling was legalized 90 years ago. There has never been anybody in the casino leadership or organized crime killed in the state of Nevada in 90 years. Five people associated with the industry were killed out of state. None of them had anything to do with what was going on here. And there is nobody in the desert. There's nobody missing. We'd have a record of anybody missing. People have fellow workers. They have parents, they have children, they have spouses. Nobody's missing.
What about the guy who had a big marker?
Benny Binion, who was one of the great casino operators, he was number one in downtown Las Vegas. He told me one time, and he was tried for murder twice back in Dallas, and he told me one time, I didn't bring it up, he did. He said, one thing I want you to know. You don't hurt somebody because they don't pay their credit. Our goal is to take all the money someone has. When they have no more money and they've done everything we want, how can anybody go and hurt them? That has to be the most awful, insane, crazy thing to do.
You believe the guy?
Oh, I know. I know. He was literally like a daddy to me. This guy protected. Mo Dalitz and Benny Binion had the word out that nobody from organized crime comes into Las Vegas and pushes anyone around. And anyone went to either one, the person either left town or they completely behaved, and nothing like the movies where they give people dirty looks. The few I heard of that stayed, they behaved themselves. This was the reality. That's what's so amazing.
But they didn't have Jimmy Two Times on payroll to bump off people?
They all would defend themselves. When I said, how did this convention salesman know everything, he was... Mo's enforcer. That's what he told me that day. All this came out of the blue. But they only reacted if threatened. Every one of these key people had horrible things done to them. If it was going to continue, they'd kill them. If it was over, no matter how offended they were, it was over. Let me give you, and I can give you example after example, but we'll take Frank Costello. He was once the boss of bosses of America's Mafia. He built the Tropicana Hotel on the Strip as a hidden interest. It was his.
And he was out of New York, right?
Yes. He was one of the two gangs in Manhattan. Siegel was with one, and Costello was with the other. One night, Costello walked into... he had the most expensive place in New York, probably the world for that reason. and he walked into the lobby, and a guy came out from behind a post, and he fired a gun right at his head. And it's just one of those miraculous things. It was at a, he was in front of him, but at a very slight angle, and it just bounced off his head. But Costello fell bleeding. The guy ran. Everyone thought Costello was dead. They put a Band-Aid on it and said, you're going to have a headache and ringing in your ears for a while, but you're going to be fine.
Jeez.
The police figured out who did it, took the guy and tried him. Costello said, I didn't see the guy. I have no idea. The medical examiner testified he had to have seen him. He was right in front of him. When he finished, he absolutely would not testify against the guy. When he finished testifying, Costello, and was walking out of the court area, the shooter called out, thank you, Frank. Now, a while later, he invites this guy to dinner with his wife and children to say, you behave yourself. You don't come after me again. This is over. The man who ordered it, that wanted to become boss of bosses, went to prison. His attorney called up, or the warden called up Costello's attorney. This is a guy that, except for a miracle, would have killed him.
Didn't he get bumped off eventually, Costello?
No. Everybody but everybody in this group except for Siegel died of old age. They didn't get involved in this stuff.
Why did they bump off Bugsy?
That one will be in my next book. But let me finish just to show you what Costello did. They said everybody in this prison is planning to kill this guy because they have so much respect for Costello. We've got people here plotting to kill him who've never met Costello, but he's a hero in their eyes. He said if Costello doesn't do something... Costello drove a few hours to the prison, met with him in a private room, said all this stops, etc., and put out word, come in with a camera, and the two of them stood together smiling for the camera.
Jeez.
He gave the camera to the warden. He said, when you develop that film, he said, put it on your message board. Once they see we're friends, it will be over. And the warden said from an hour after that picture went up, there was no more talk about killing this guy.
He had that much power. Now, let me ask you a couple Vegas questions. Did you ever see Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and Dean Martin in person, live?
I saw all of them many times, but never together as the Rat Pack.
But they brought them into Vegas, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
They brought the crowds in.
Oh, yes. Sammy Davis was one of the biggest draws ever, wherever he appeared. At the Copacabana, he ended up with the record crowd, and that was the most famous nightclub in America. Dean Martin was the biggest draw in Las Vegas in two ways. One, he drew the biggest audiences, and two, he drew the most high rollers, but the man he followed was a unbelievable comedian by the name of Joey Lewis. He was number one in America nightclubs his whole life. When he retired with a stroke, Dean Martin took his place as number one. 2 years later, he lost being the biggest draw because the young man by the name of Elvis Presley
That's right.
showed up.
Wasn't Joey Lewis, wasn't he slashed up by the mob?
They
cut his throat or something, didn't they?
It was the most horrendous beating. He didn't know language. They beat his head and cracked his skull with a pistol.
All because he wouldn't go to work for the mob-owned club, right?
Yeah. And it was Machine Gun McGurn that did that in Chicago, and they slit his throat, his vocal cord. He was Jewish, but he sang these gorgeous Irish songs, and he could no longer sing those. They slit his face. He had a big scar, and he couldn't move his face, and it took him years and years of the hardest work to come back to be able to entertain an audience. And I saw him when I was 12, and of course on television back then they had all the variety shows, so I saw all the great entertainers, and he was the greatest. So he was number one. When he quit, Dean Martin became number
popped
one
up
as the draw, which took. But Dean Martin, the rest of his career, when it came to high rollers, he was the guy that the wealthy people went to see.
Sinatra played Joey Lewis in a movie, The Joker's Wild.
Yeah, but he didn't play. It was sad because it wasn't the real Joey Lewis. In the movie, he's sad and beaten and everything. Everybody that knew him said he never said a bad word about anybody. His wife said he never learned how to be.
You mean even after they sliced him up?
Oh, he was the most lovable, nice man. He was unbelievable. He never told anybody. No one knew it until he died. But he collected more money. He did more the roast. Remember the roast Dean Martin did?
Oh, yeah. Great TV
he was
shows.
Copying Joey Lewis. He started the roast at the Friars Club. He did roasts all the time. He raised more money for charity than anyone had ever done and gave this all away. The number of people he took care of after he died, what I put together, and it's all in my book, and he never talked about it. He didn't want anyone to know it. All he cared about was making people happy and taking care of the needy.
Did you ever meet Don Rickles?
That was a very bad experience.
Really?
I was front and center with a girl I met that night. And we were watching another show. He came out, and as he came out, I thought, this is bad. I'm too close.
Uh-oh.
He invited me up on stage.
Oh.
And he started to feel me up and said, I'm lonely. I shoved him away. I went running.
Be careful what you say on the air here, Billy.
I got away. That was his whole shtick. But it was really shocking to have this guy grab me. And I run away, and I'm looking at this girl, me running from this guy, and I thought he's ruined my whole night. I wanted to punch him out.
Rickles loved pointing people out in the audience and ridiculing them. That was his whole thing.
Yeah, and he did it in a way that it didn't offend. I mean, if you were to truly insult someone, I wouldn't want to be there. He had a style about him that he got away with it. I mean, he was a sensational entertainer.
We didn't talk yet about Lucky Luciano in Vegas. He was part of the Bugsy group, right? Or Bugsy was part of his group.
Yeah. There was five partners that were far and away number one in Prohibition. And Luciano, they were equal partners, but Luciano was the guy, not because he was tough. He was a man that just literally commanded respect. When he spoke, he was a very quiet man. I'm not kidding you. The bankers of America listened when he talked about finance.
They deported him, though, didn't they?
Oh, yes. And it was on a frame. But he was the most powerful man, and he never showed up in Vegas. They deported him before. But everybody I knew and everybody I talked to, they were associated, and it was his values. And he was the one that no violence, no drugs. The mafia didn't touch drugs all those years that he and Costello, the 25 years they were boss of bosses. The violence disappeared. You go across America, there's practically no violence between mafia gangs. A lot before them and a lot after.
Capone changed that, didn't he?
Well, what happened, and this brings us back to Vegas, Capone was one of the most awful, violent people there were.
Yep.
But he loved these three gangs, and he backed them in both the underworld and overworld, and he partnered with them, and they kept partnering after he was gone from Chicago. They had the opposite values, and they got along. When the St. Valentine's Day massacre occurred, what happened was...
Seven people shot to death, I think.
Shot to death, yeah. And some completely innocent. It was a terrible thing. They just walked in with two machine guns and shot seven people.
Dressed up as cops, weren't they?
Yep. And they were driving what appeared to be a cop car. It was not a real one, but it was a perfect duplicate. They found it later. But the thing was that I'll give you the background because this is an incredible thing, and it shows you where the people I was associated with come from. Luciano became the lieutenant to the biggest mafia gang in the country because there was five of them in New York, and because they wanted to sell booze everywhere, and so they offered him a piece, and he and Costello and all these people joined the group, and he was the lieutenant. They were so upset over that massacre that he called the only meeting in the history of America of all gang leaders of all nationalities, and he's a lieutenant, not the leader.
Mm.
They called it in New York, and a comedy was made about it called Some Like It Hot. I'm sorry, in New Jersey, in Atlantic.
I remember that movie title.
And they called the meeting, and Capone didn't know what was coming. And at that meeting, they thought it was, you know, to work together. And Luciano said to Capone, with all these guys there, Capone couldn't get away. He said, we are the heroes of America. We are supplying a great demand. The people love us. You single-handedly are turning the public, the politicians, and the police against us. We're all going to go to jail and lose everything if you don't stop the violence. This cannot go on.
He was right.
Sitting in front of him was Luciano, the head of his gang, Costello, the head of his gang, and Mo Dalitz. And it was a bit Dalitz, being in the Midwest, would have been the person called upon to take out Capone. And he said, you have to stop this. He said, I will. They said, you have to give us something tangible to show us. He said, I will. He drove 60 miles from there to Philadelphia, went up to two detectives who we know he knew. He picked a handgun out of his pocket, handed it to him. He says, I'm carrying an illegal weapon. It was a $300 fine in Philadelphia. Within 5 hours, in the middle of the night, a judge sent him to jail for a year, and all the violence in Chicago stopped.
Wow. That's amazing.
And they remained friends. After Prohibition, Capone wasn't around, but the people that followed him joined Mo Dalitz. He built the biggest discount liquor there's ever been 20 years before Sam Walton built Walton. They had the biggest distillery in the history of the world, and they did everything legal except they put a fake tax stamp on it. Had Chicago run it, because they were full of greed, they would have kept the money. Dalitz says, no, we're passing that on.
Exactly. Bill, we're going to take a break and come back and take promised phone calls next. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Bill Friedman, as we talk about Las Vegas. His website, BillFriedmanAuthor.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Bill, let's go to calls. They're lining up here for you. Let's go west of the Rockies. Ted in San Diego, welcome to the show, Ted.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I was in New York recently, and I was struck by how the real sheriff in town is still the mafia. And it starts with the expressways that start to toll you when you get near there. And then they like $16 for the tunnel. And everywhere you go, collect a toll here, collect a toll there. To the point that the people who live there have dead-eyed looks, even the babies in their strollers. So the FBI and the CIA aren't doing their job in the Far East.
What's going on there? What do you think, Bill?
You're saying in New York?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I did all my research about this group of prohibitionists and illegal and legal casino development from the 20s through the 80s. And that's what I specialized and got all my information about. So I really, don't
know what's going on now. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, part of the mob could be the government overcharging people and taxing them to death. Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Quick questions. Bill, first, did people get stuck back then without credit cards if they maxed out on their cash? And the second question would be, you're referencing that they had restraint out of being pragmatic. But in the mix at that time, there was some strict moms, potentially, in the Prohibition era, there was some that were like that. And also the pulpit, did that influence some of those people, even though it might have been years in the past for them, those voices from the past that were a little bit like, don't do this?
Let's talk a little bit first, Bill, about cash. Did you not run a casino that gave out cash, like as credit?
Yes.
How did that work?
We could not legally collect it. So the whole key was being able to get good information about the person and how good they were in payment. And there was an organization called Central Credit in Nevada. And if you wanted to belong to it and get the information, you had to put in all the information about every player you had.
Uh-huh.
And so you needed a credit manager who had a great sense of figuring out who was good and who wasn't.
From his gut.
Now, I did something that I even thought was stupid. I took over two places that were basically empty. They just had no business. They just been run to the ground. One was the Castaways, the first one. And what happened when new places opened, I'm talking about the big hotels now, they'd give cash more freely, knowing we'll have big write-offs in the beginning, but we got to get people in here, mm-hmm. and the legitimate ones will build from.
And get them to stay.
That's it. And so it was a write-off. Well, I did something a little different, and this is back in 1976, so the money was probably worth five times spending power it is today. Anyone who worked in the casino industry could get $100 cash. Anyone that was an executive could get $200, but I didn't keep a record of it. What I did, we had a little 3x5 cards where we knew who they were,
mm-hmm.
and they gave us a nickname, and they signed a check with the nickname. So when people came in and audited our books, we had George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Mickey Mouse, Goofy. The thing was, we couldn't collect it. And I figured I'm going to write all of that off. This was a loss leader. But at least people are going to come in to get it, and we're going to get talked about, and it'll start the moving. What blew my mind was, back then, an American Express traveler's check was the gold credit. The public believed it absolutely would 100% be cashed. Now, our write-offs, it wasn't because they had some rules, but our write-offs were like 0.000%. What was amazing, what I thought would be fast write-offs and we'll forget it, I continued that for 13 years. We didn't have any signed document. We couldn't have collected any which way. The employees on that strip were so appreciative of having that 100 or 200 whenever they needed it.
They paid.
We virtually wrote off none of it.
They came back and paid, didn't they?
Yeah, because
that's fantastic.
We were a revolving account for them.
What would $100 be today from 1976? Thousand?
You'd have to look it, but I'm just roughly guessing it'd be five times.
At 500 to 1,000, I bet.
Yep.
Good for you. Matt, that's innovative.
In other words, that wasn't smartness on my part. I just lucked out.
Matt, truck driving in Ohio. Take it away, Matt.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just had two quick questions about the origins of Vegas that I had always heard, you know, rumors about and was never really clear on. And the first one is now that Vegas was originally established as a housing project when they were building the Hoover Dam. And the second one was that when the mob started taking loans out and buying up Vegas land, that they kind of forced the old guard out and took everything over.
Okay. Two reactions. You are correct that when the dam was built, the town expanded.
Right.
But the town was created by the railroad in 1905 as a stopping point between Los Angeles and Salt Lake City, Utah. So it was here before, but you heard correctly that that's when the town started its growth during the building of the dam, because I don't remember the number of people, but there were several thousand workers. And the mob never pushed anybody around. Remember, they may have been hidden interests, or they may have had guys without police records with license, but if they did anything wrong, they would have lost their license and their casino. Nobody misbehaved that came. That was the irony. I'm not saying that in Chicago they were horrible. I'm just saying in Vegas, everybody from Chicago that was in the casino business completely behaved themselves.
What was the Frank Sinatra story? Did he not used to sing at the Desert Inn, and then it got bought out by Howard Hughes, who didn't like Frank because they both liked David Gardner, and so Hughes took away his casino credit and embarrassed Sinatra, and Sinatra quit and went to Caesars to sing?
It was the Sands, and there was a flare-up, and I'm just not remembering what it was, and Sinatra got angry and then looked for a place to go and ended up at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, they yanked his casino credit. I know that. And then that's what really ticked him off and got him to go to Caesar's. But I think it was over Ava Gardner.
And I am sorry, that one I just don't I don't remember what set him off. All of the guys left. You know, Dean Martin went to the
Riviera. Yeah.
Sammy Davis went elsewhere, etc.
What's the top talent in Vegas these days, Bill?
The big difference from today is there are a number. Number one, the lounges are gone, and the lounges did not have minor acts. They had big-time acts.
And how big were the lounges?
The biggest was the Sahara at 500. Mine was more what you would call the big size, beyond that one at 300. I had the biggest crowds, the Silver Slipper, and, you know, it was huge. We had lines at 4 a.m. on weeknights.
Wow. What did you charge for tickets for top talent?
Nothing.
Oh, it was free? Really?
The lounges were completely free. It was just the price of a drink.
So you wanted them to drink and gamble.
That was it. And but today, and what happened was they tried to book the stars in the showrooms for 3 weeks. I mean, that was the general policy. Now, sometime because of the stars schedule or the room schedule, it would be 2 weeks or 4 weeks, but everyone was there 2, 3, or 4 weeks. So it was like if you came from L.A. every 3 weeks, it was everybody on that strip was brand new. Today, the shows come in for a few months to a few years. So, well, there are many shows today. If you're a regular, you start running into the same people.
Next up, let's go to Eric, truck driving in Indianapolis. First-time caller. Hi, Eric.
Hi, you guys. How y'all doing tonight?
Great, sir. Thank you.
Great. Great show tonight. Seems like the weekends has always got the best shows on coast to coast here. You got an extraordinary guest on tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And he seems like it'd be like he's really informational. And I got about four questions if I can think them all, because when I get to thinking, I get scatterbrained. You know, I'm getting to the age where I can't think of everything. But is it does he have to be kind of careful with how what he says on the air nowadays, being since it's been so long that all this happened? Do you still got to be careful of what you say? Do you think that there's still people out here that might be a threat to your life? And what did the Kennedys, do we really know, does he really know that what happened to the Kennedys, was they involved in this? Is that what got JFK executed? Because JFK was, I love JFK. I try to find out as much as I can about him, because I was just 3 years old when he got shot. And really, I think it traumatized people for almost a lifetime over that. That was a terrible thing.
We never recovered, Eric, from that. Never recovered. Let's go with your two questions first, and I'll pop in on the JFK thing as well, but to see what Bill might know. But, Bill, do you ever look over your shoulder?
No, and except for that one experience, I never did then. That was what was incredible. In other words, I stalked him, you know, pure and simple. You know, I meant he could tell people I was a real nasty guy if he wanted to, because I just kept pursuing him. But except for that, I never had a conflict with anyone except on business. And there was never any threat. All these people were giving me the information. They wanted the truth out there. So there was no threats. That was the irony. When it comes to JFK,
I think the mob did him in, but not the group you've been talking about tonight.
The big problem that we've got is the investigation was so botched that it might have been solvable if they had done it properly.
Maybe they didn't want to do it properly.
Oh, whatever happened, I mean, I spent a lot of time studying that, and it's just a mess with what you end up with. You can draw some clear possibilities, but the mob didn't have anything to do with it. Whoever wanted him out was not the mob.
Not the mob that you've been talking about, but there were a couple gangsters that we have mentioned on this program over the years who wanted to get to Bobby Kennedy to get him to stop investigating them. And they figured the only way to do that is to get John out of the picture, and that means Kennedy would be Bobby Kennedy would go, and I think that was the reason. I got to ask you something, Bill. I've got so many people on hold, and I'm going to open lines next hour. Could you stay for another half hour?
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I've seen every line lit. I've never seen this so much for this topic, and that's fantastic. But I think, Eric, we've got our Kennedy special coming up in November again. Make sure you're part of the program, to be sure. But this is fun. Do you like Vegas today?
Do I like it?
Yes, sir.
No.
You do not? How come?
It was a warm, friendly town, everybody knew everybody. Everybody, everywhere you went, you knew everybody. And today is just a huge, huge.
Too corporate.
Yeah, and it lost its personality for us. I mean, the entertainment, everything. It just isn't the same as it used to be.
Well, will it ever come back to what it used to be?
No, see, in the old days, it was gambling and entertainment, but I'm talking about, you know, fast-changing entertainment.
Sure.
And everything was the gambling, and the percentage of people who gambled who came to town was extremely high.
Right.
And the only department that made money beside the casino was the rooms. Everything else lost money. It was a loss leader. Today, they're making money on everything, and the accountants think, oh, well, look, we're making the money on the casino, and we'll make the money on all this other stuff. It doesn't work that way. People come with a budget.
Well, we're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls with you. Open lines will start in 30 minutes.